Now live from Eberbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
All right, along with David Garrard, Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Happy Friday, brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jaguars Today just kicking off here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Dave, they got the one that counted last year against the Giants. It was one of the few bright spot results for Jacksonville last year. So a return against the Giants this week and a test to see where they stand compared to week one of the preseason. Interesting to me that you as a former quarterback or a quarterback, however you want to phrase it, could immediately pick that out in warmups from Blake Bortles. Because obviously we can see the results. The ball, when he's in the game, did look tighter. You didn't even think about the wobble that he had all last year. But I'll be honest with you, it's difficult for me standing on the sideline during a practice to demonstrably point out this is where those mechanics are different. He just looks better overall, looks better, crisper delivering the football. I can't tell you if the elbow's tucked a little or it's high or whatever. I don't really care. I don't really need to. My feeling is if he delivers the ball accurately on a consistent basis, I don't care where his elbow is. But obviously that's why he's doing these things.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't see where his elbow was from my seat, but I could just tell watching all the other quarterbacks throw passes and theirs being slightly off here and there in warm-ups, and then always just seeing his in the right spot, on the money. You know, you could just tell that his confidence level is up. And when your confidence is up, that's going to allow you to be a much better quarterback than you might really be, because you are just, it feels like you're just throwing the ball into an ocean. You know, you're just, everybody's wide open. You're just out there just slinging the ball. And that, to me, is where he looked like he was. Even in the game, you know, he threw that pass to Harbor, and from my seats, you know, it looked like it was going to the two defensive guys, but then Harbor comes out of there and he drops it, but it was still right there in his hands.
Right.
And he, Blake took the blame for, you know, maybe it was a little too high, that kind of stuff. You know, everybody could see that Harbor should have definitely caught
that
ball.
Well, he did throw the one a little bit high to Harbor, but he did throw the one that obviously Harbor, if he had caught it, might have been able to turn up and score.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, the way we counted it, we thought three drops out of the four incompletions, a very sharp day for Blake Bortles. So we'll see if we get
And that's what you want to see. That's what you want to see in the preseason, especially when, you know, the defenses aren't running a lot of their big scheme defenses. You're going to get just more vanilla stuff. So you want to go out there and look sharp, especially in the first, second preseason game. Third preseason game is going to be a little bit harder because they're really game planning and putting things in to kind of try to stop you. But you still should look decent then, too. So those things are what's going to help this team. When he is playing like that, that's going to help this team be a much better team. Everybody talks about, you know, having the defense better, all that kind of stuff. But if your quarterback is on it, everybody else just follows suit, and the offense can keep up whatever the other offensive team is doing. So it's really going to rely on him and how well and his mechanics are and the guys are around him. And that offensive line, they have to protect for him, because no matter how great you are, if you're on your back, you're not able to do anything.
They did a better job last week, to be sure, than we've seen last season, certainly, and we hope that continues this week. And I think one of the interesting things for me, from your perspective as a quarterback, knowing you've got a new weapon in Julius Thomas, and I know they built some level of chemistry over the summer, but now Julius Thomas, after a couple plays in preseason game one, is likely done until the opener, it appears. How much is that going to impact their chemistry, or is Julius Thomas enough of a savvy veteran? He's out there. I know he's running routes in practice,
yeah,
even though he can't catch balls. Is it going to be that big of a deal?
You know, it's definitely better if he's out there playing and practicing and catching the balls from Blake, but it's not. I think he's enough of a veteran to where when he's open, he's open. You know, he's not going to change his route on you and run something different. If the player is open, you're going to throw the ball to him and try to be as accurate as possible. So I think he's going to be just fine. He's not necessarily a receiver where you got to have a lot of different routes off of one particular route where he could adjust to this or that, and maybe you guys have to be in sync with each other. He's a tight end, so you know, he's running pretty much the routes he's supposed to run. And as long as he's getting open and getting separation, that's all you want.
Twitter is very happy that Dave is back.
They are.
Today, by the way.
Twitter, I know, we're getting the flood in already of thank goodness line. Dave is back.
You're happy. They've suffered through Tony and I by ourselves.
Right.
Way
it must
too
be
much
football
yourself.
Season.
Hey, I am happy to be
here.
Back. Absolutely. I am so happy it's football season.
Yeah, good to have you back, man. Well, listen, let's take a quick time out here, and let's just get settled, and we'll get into it today. We'll open up phone lines for you folks out there if you want to pick Dave's brain today on what he has seen from the Jags throughout the offseason and where we're headed, obviously, into preseason week two. Today, question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asks you, what are the top three things you'll be looking for or that you want to see out of the Jags' performance tomorrow night against the New York Giants? As you know, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at David Garrard 9 as well, and post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, 641-1010, the call-in line. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, so you can use that for either purpose if you'd like to get on and make your opinion heard today. So with that, we'll get into a variety of Jaguar and NFL-related topics today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you, just kicking things off. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Glad you're along. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. We'll talk Jag football on and off the field, apparently, this morning. Shad Khan making news as a rumor debunker over in London.
We all laughed at that rumor when we talked about it.
Sean's laying down the law, man. He is straight regulating the London media right now like nobody's business, Tony. As the rumors were that... remember at the time when the Tottenham team...
It was a whole convoluted theory.
Yes, Tottenham, the soccer home, the Hotspurs, are building a new 60,000-seat stadium. And they also announced, I guess, an agreement to play an NFL game there following its completion in 2018 for, you know, like a game a year, kind of like we've been seeing multiple games, three games this season in London for the entire NFL.
Sure.
And so the rumor at the time was, well, Shad will sell Fulham, buy Tottenham, and then move to the Jags to the Tottenham Stadium, which at the time, Shad's spokesman immediately came out and said, this is just stupid.
I don't know where they're getting this.
Yeah. Shad debunked that in an interview with the London Times and said that, look, you can't correct every rumor. This is a quote from Shad. But I was surprised and had to consider the morale of the people at Fulham and the people at Wembley, so we called them out on it. And he said it's due to the growing popularity of the NFL in England beyond expectation. We've seen a dramatic shift. Wembley's been a big part of this. It's a world-class national stadium. Now it's, quote, how do we make the Wembley NFL experience even better, end quote. Okay, in the article, you don't see a direct quote from Shad, but you do see both referenced in the London Times article and in a write-up that's done on a site called Get West London, where it says that Shad has vowed to honor an arrangement to play a game at the National Stadium until 2030. Okay, first of all, if there is such an arrangement, we're unaware of such an arrangement.
Right.
But if they were to sign a deal, guys, that said, we'll go over there and we will extend this thing, that which the four-year arrangement runs out after next year, right? And there's been speculation that when they go over to London this year, Dave, that they will announce an extension of that. And if that were the case, we were anticipating probably another 3 or 4 year extension tacked onto the end. Let's continue to play it out. This sounds more like a 15-year extension, right, of what's going on out there. But I'll say this, if they were to lock in, for the next 15 years, we're going to play one game a year in London. That would make me feel even better about the status of the franchise in Jacksonville, Florida. It's not like he's saying, hey, this has been so successful, let's just continue it as it is, because they've said all along this is being done to strengthen the franchise stability in Jacksonville, Florida. And to lock in an agreement, if it in fact comes to pass, to play one game a year for the next 15 years there would indicate to me that that's what they're looking to do, and they're not looking to see how this plays out over the next year or two and, you know, jump ship, which is not what we thought. But you continue to hear that kind of speculation, and as long as, you know, the Jags aren't winning a lot of games and the national media doesn't have a clear picture of the engagement of this fan base here in Jacksonville, I think those stories are going to linger.
Yeah, you know, it does sound good, but I would just hope that it doesn't look so good, you know, once the Jags are, you know, out there winning, you know, 10, 12 ball games a year, you know, for 5 years, and then all of a sudden they've got a great fan base over there, and the money is bigger over there, and the lights look bigger over there, and, hey, we could have a team in London, you know, full-time, and somehow they can work it out, work the schedule out to make it work. That would be the only thing that scares me, you know, just because you lock in for so long that, you know, it starts to look really good over there, and they're just bringing in droves of money and fans and all that kind of stuff, and it kind of, they're like, what's the point of staying here in Jacksonville when we can be over here just capturing all of Europe?
I would say I could understand that fear if it weren't for what to me seems like the overwhelming investment that he is looking to make in the infrastructure of the stadium, expanding that to the shipyards with the vision for that project with, you know, a three-field practice facility, yep, a covered practice facility, development of the downtown area, all these things. And look, if they get to the point where they're winning 10 or 12 games, they'll be standing room only for tickets here in Jacksonville. You know, and I think that's one thing they've done is they've increased their high revenue tickets here, right? There are different options. You've got the field level seating now. Obviously, yeah, you've got all the different amenities up in the north end zone with the FanDuelville and everything else going on out there, that their revenue is increasing here while the average ticket price has not, you know, the common ticket price,
yeah,
has not gone up. But if you get to the point where you're winning 10 games a year and you're selling out and then demand gets to that point, I think the revenues continue to rise here because then you can legitimately say, all right, well, there's a demand beyond what we can fulfill, and that's when the prices go up. You add that to what's already a benefit to going over there, and I think they're going to be in great financial shape. They got to get to that level where they're winning 9 to 12 games every year.
Well, sure. Well, look, we know how this city's going to react if this team turns into a winner. I mean, there's still fans showing up every week. They won 7 games in the last 2 years,
yeah,
right? I mean, there's 25,000 people showing up for a scrimmage, which is 5,000 more than last season when they won 3 football games over the course of the 2014 season. There's obviously a level of excitement in this city, and we've all felt what it's like to be here when they're good, right? I mean, David, when y'all went up and won that playoff game against Pittsburgh,
oh, yeah,
that season was electric. The,
yeah,
city was on fire for this football team. I the level of fandom in this city, I don't think is in question. And I think the London thing makes them more viable here because I don't think the NFL, as far as a team just sitting in London, is ever going to work.
Yeah.
I don't think the level of interest is there. I think it's kind of cool when a team's coming in and you get to see 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 different teams over the course of a season. But if it's the same team every week, guess what? In the NFL, every now and then teams go through lulls where they're winning, I don't know, 7 games in,
yeah,
2 years, right? And when that happens in London, nobody's going to go watch that. Yep. Not when they have Premier League soccer playing that same weekend at these same stadiums, right? They're not going to come choose this other sport when they have their sport going on head-to-head with it. I just don't see it happening.
I guess also, too, then, I have a little bit of a pause that we miss a game for the next how many years, you know?
Like, understood.
That should be a game that our fans get to see right here at home, but we don't.
But when you look at what, in the period where they've won 9 games in 3 years since Shad took over, right, if they didn't have that additional income, what would the financial status of the franchise look like?
So yeah,
it's almost like, you know what, I know you do, but it's, you know, so it's like you look down the line and you're like, boy, we're really going to miss having that game. But if you didn't do this, you might miss having 8 games.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No, I'm with you.
So I'm on board with it. It doesn't expand beyond this point. It's not ideal, certainly, to only have 7 home games during the regular season here in Jacksonville. But for the most part, I think it's been a pretty good benefit. And I'm interested to hear more if there really is an agreement in place. And if so, if we're going to get an announcement beyond what we're seeing in these London papers here, just some indirect quotes of Shad. But he did definitely come out and shoot down the Tottenham rumors about buying that. And which, you know, it's just one of those things, Tony. We continue to go on radio stations around the country as, you know, they preview different teams around the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things they ask me every time, Dave, you moving to London? What's up with the fans? You guys don't have any fans down there, and it just it's you spend the first 5 minutes having to educate people on how behind the times they are of what's going on with this fan base and the excitement level. I cannot imagine another professional football team in this country that could have averaged 3 wins for the last 3 years and would have the fans as engaged as Tony and I see them on a daily basis here.
Absolutely. I mean, I come to the games and I see them out there cheering. They're pumped. They're ready. You know, they haven't had the ability to enjoy after most games excitements of wins, but they're there. They're in the stadium. They're pumped. They talk about it, you know, around town. I hear it all the time. You know, so yeah, we went from moving to LA to now we're going to London. So it's one day we'll be out of that talk.
No, oh, yeah. It's going to come to an end one day. And for all the people out there who like to, you know, poke fun at Jacksonville for whatever fan problems they have, look, there are heritage teams in this league that have those problems when their team is bad. Pittsburgh went through it. I don't know if Green Bay had attendance problems, you know, in the 80s. I don't know if they did or not.
I'm guessing they didn't have a waiting list for season tickets when they were going between the Bart Starr and
right.
Brett Favre.
Well, Green Bay might be an exception to the rule that I just don't know about, right? But I know Chicago had problems getting people in the seats when they were bad in the 90s. I know Oakland has problems getting fans in the seats right now. That's a heritage team in the NFL,
sure.
Right? I mean, that's a long-standing brand in this league. They have problems getting people to come to the games. Why? Their team is lousy. It's not about the heritage of your team. It's about how good the product is on the field. And the flat-out truth has been it's been bad in Jacksonville for 6 or 7 years. And that there's still as many people sticking around as there is isn't going on in Oakland and some of these other places. They're having the same issues. It's just Jacksonville's this little stepbrother to the league.
It's tough to spend money when your team is not giving you a whole lot on the field. I mean, one thing is getting a ticket, but then when you want to pay for food and you get parking and all these other things and just all the stuff that goes on around the stadium, the drive in sometimes, you're like, I don't want to go through all that when we're not getting any kind of results on the field. So, but for our fans to still fight through all that stuff, still pay their money to come, their seats are still filling up. So it's not like they haven't been coming to the games. It's just that Jacksonville has not been on the national spotlight for anything good on the field, and so all you're going to hear about are the negative things, and that's it.
Keep an eye on that. More details from the London Times story as we get.
I do have a quote here from Jim Woodcock. I see Brent Martineau tweeting it out right now.
He's a spokesman for Shad.
Yes. The quote, there's no agreement, but discussions have been frequent and promising. Shad and the Jaguars have been clear that the London agreement has been extremely successful and essential to the local revenue streams and long-term viability of the franchise in Jacksonville, and that an extension of the current agreement would be welcomed. That said, this is ultimately a decision that will be made by the NFL. The one thing that is certain is Shad's commitment to the Jaguars in Jacksonville is as strong as ever.
Yeah, and look, again, that's kind of how it read to me. Like, there was no direct quote that I saw of Shad saying, yes, we are locked in. It may have been a case of, this is where we want to get to, right? This is what we're looking forward to doing, or our hope is to do. Let's play a game there. Let's think for the next 15 years we're going to be playing a game in London and then see where things stand at that point in time. Just interesting developments, and, you know, I'm sure he gets tired of rumors popping up all the time. I'm sure Wayne Weaver got tired. I'm sure that's just the nature of it when you're in a franchise that gets those kind of questions, but at least shooting down some of the obviously incorrect stuff that was coming out this
right.
summer.
That was crazy. That whole Tottenham thing was nuts from the beginning.
That was some guys in London, it sounded like, just putting two and two together and come on up with, you know, I can understand how you could make these jumps. Well, he owns a team over here, so why doesn't he do this? And it could happen, right? And it became went from it could happen to, oh, this is going to happen, or this is rumored to be happening. I don't think there was ever any substance or sourcing on those rumors.
No.
Because if it's a complete fabrication, who would be in the know to say something like that, obviously?
No, and look, if you read about those kind of stories, we're reading about them in London papers, right, where whatever's happening with the NFL and the potential of a team coming is so back burner. Like, the story is about who's going to try to buy Tottenham, Like, that's the story they're trying to get to. They don't care if there's an NFL team in that stadium, too. So what? If that's something that comes with it, whatever. We think it may be Shad Khan, so this is what we think could come with that guy coming in to take over Tottenham, if he is the guy that takes over Tottenham. As far as the NFL coming over there, whatever. You know, it's not an important part of the story when you read it from their perspective. And again today, reading about Shad Khan and his comments, it's about his comments to protect Fulham. It has nothing to do with the Jacksonville Jaguars in their mind.
All right. When we return in a moment here on a Caudill and Cadillac Friday, we'll direct our attention to the play on the field with the Jaguars coming up against the Giants. Gus Bradley on the Gus Bradley Show here on 1010XL laying out some thoughts last night. We'll hear that, get David's opinion on what he has to say, and also look back at how Dave felt the offensive line performed last week and what he's looking for out of the Jaguars as they take on the New York Giants tomorrow night. You'll get the game right here. Pre-game coverage beginning at 4:30 tomorrow on your home for the Jaguars, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Again, Caudill and Cadillac Friday here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, David Garrard, live at Everbank. It's 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, it's Caudill and Cadillac Friday. Caudill and, get that Caudill and edge. No dealer fees, no finance markups. It's going to save you thousands every time you buy a vehicle. New, pre-owned, doesn't matter. How about a lease? 2015 SRX crossover, standard collection, $339 a month. On a 24-month lease, Caudill and Cadillac since 1905, the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. We've got an on-site body shop. We'll paint and repair any model. Caudill and Cadillac guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to CaudillandCadillac.com, or better yet, visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Tell them Mike Dempsey sent you, or give them a call at 642-5111, 642-5111 for Caudill and Cadillac, our Friday sponsor of Jaguars today. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up momentarily. Got the phone lines open to you at 641-1010. Again, the text line being inundated with, thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave, for coming back and saving this wretched show. I cannot believe we made it through the summer without David Garrard. I'm only slightly exaggerating, but ever so slightly. Let's go to the phones and welcome John on board Jaguars today this morning. Good morning, John. You're on with David Garrard. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? So I have a question for David. Not really a football question, but it's just something I'm curious about. So, David, you're obviously the second-best quarterback in Jacksonville, and you're great with the fans here. My question is, if when you travel to New York or L.A., are you recognized there as a football player, or are you just a regular guy like everyone else?
You would be surprised how well you can be recognized in big cities like that. When I went up to play with the Jets, I would be walking through Times Square, all those different places, and guys that are working there, the people that live there, the people that are working, the real fans, they recognize you all over the place. I mean, it is ridiculous. You go in somewhere to get something to eat, and the guy that's cooking the food in the back comes out and says, "Hey, man, you know, you were great in Jacksonville, da da da," all that kind of stuff. And it is very surprising how well I've been recognized in places like that. When I went to play in Miami, I'd be in Fort Lauderdale, I'd be in Miami, and people would still recognize me. And I thought, you know, I'd be able to come down here and you know, nobody would know who
kind
I am.
Kind of blend in.
Yeah, blend in. I guess it's a little hard for me to blend in. You know, I'm not, you know, just a regular little guy, you know. So I stand out a little bit. So you almost kind of think, oh, it seems like I've known him before. In Miami, they think that I'm LeBron a lot of times. And I'm like, no, he's got me about 5 inches.
Who do you wear, lifts?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, we're looking eye to eye right now, buddy. He's 6'8". So.
and you just see my entourage? Oh, you don't see my entourage? I'm
exactly.
Probably not LeBron.
That's what I would have done. Yeah, I'll sign that for you, LeBron.
Just charge that to the Miami Heat.
Yeah, but it is surprising when I'm in a bigger city like that how just real fans still can recognize me.
Yeah, and so you're saying not just because you like got signed by the Jets, and that's why they're recognizing you. You're saying guys are recognizing you from what you've already had done.
If I've been, if I'm on vacation or whatever it is, you know, they'll recognize me in the Bahamas. I've been on vacation in the Bahamas, and a lot of the locals there are like, yeah, you know, you with the, you know, Jaguars. My acting is terrible, but I don't know if that was more Jamaica.
It's
or
better than Mike's. He would have gone Australian.
G'day. All right. By the way, you got that LeBron body from Retro Fitness, didn't you?
Absolutely.
See how I did that?
Yeah,
Mike?
I like
that.
I appreciate it. Retro definitely.
How's the business doing?
It's great. Both locations, Bay Meadows and Harbor Village on Atlantic Boulevard. They're both doing great. You know, we're excited about it. It's growing. We're continuing to get more and more people in and helping them change their lives and helping them reach their goals. So, you know, we're pumped.
I know you always encourage people to just drop in, but what's the best way if they're interested, if they're thinking, man, it's about time I need to, before it gets too late, get that extra 15 off the midsection. What's the best way to go about it?
Well, they can go to RetroFitnessJax.com and find their way to get in. They can go to either location, whichever location is the closest to them. And we're giving away free assessments and a free personal trainer workout. So you can come in not having an enrollment fee and, you know, just start working out right away. And we're looking out for you. So we want to help you reach your goals. You know, sometimes it's tough to afford personal training, you know, but we're going to give you enough information to where you can succeed and be able to come in and work with a purpose.
All right, RetroFitnessJax.com, or check them out, Bay Meadows or the Harbor Village location. That's David Garrard with Retro Fitness. Back to the phones we go at 641-1010. Rick is on hold. Rick, you're on with David Garrard on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Okay, goes for either one of you, but David, do you think Cappy will make the team, or is he just a flash in the pan? He did great last week. Just want to know. I'll take it off the air.
You got a Cappy, who's kind of a, you know,
Nordley.
Nordley is his given name. Nordley Cappy, right? They call him Cap. Probably good for him that they do. But anyway, he's one of these guys that, you know, you'd never expect to make the roster. Then he shows up big, has some big plays, good, getting some good pressure in a night when the Jags didn't get a ton of pressure. Obviously working with, you know, against some second and third team guys, but again, all you can do is beat the guy that lines up across from you. Does he have a chance to make this team?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure who you're talking about, but I could just tell you, if you're a young guy, if you're an undrafted guy, if you're a guy that is just clawing to make the team, the more your name is called in a positive way, they will find a way for you to be on the team, because you're popping. You're being your name is being called out. You're making plays. And when you have guys that are drafted, guys that are supposed to be making these plays, not doing it, they'll find a way for you to be on the squad. And it might be in a special teams role, but continue to just make the plays, get your name called, be positive, do things in practice that show you're different than everybody else. And yeah, you may not have been, you know, a guy coming out of college, or you may have bounced around a few times in the league, but right now, it's your time to shine. Make those plays, even if it is in the fourth quarter with third and fourth teamers, whatever it is.
It's going on film.
Yeah, and if it's not here, it could be somewhere else. So, absolutely.
At the very least, he's got a fun name.
Yeah.
Cappy.
He really does.
Let's get to Gus Bradley yesterday. Here's what he had to say after practice. We'll also hear a little bit from Gus from the Gus Bradley Show, which airs Thursday nights at 6 o'clock here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. This was Gus immediately after practice yesterday.
We went with a walkthrough format today. Again, you might see it change from week to week, this week to next week, as we, you know, kind of look at each day and how we're going to go about doing it. But I don't think it'll change too much next week. Nothing that you would notice if you were out there. But excited about, I think, our players, the feedback we're getting, you know, as far as their legs and health and, you know, mindset, all been good. So, but really more of a mental day. It's always been a little bit more of a mental day today. And, you know, just in our preparation phase.
Gus typically has practice divided up into about 12 periods is about what he does. Earlier in the week, I want to say it was Tuesday, I think they said they spent one period looking at some of the stuff the Giants will do. Wednesday, they spent two. In a typical week, what percentage of your practice time would be devoted to looking at the opponent specifically and what they're trying to do, whether you're running against a scout team or just, you know, refreshing, giving the offense and defense a look at what the opponent that week is going to throw at you?
Well, normally, if it's a game week, you're 90% of your week is on that team.
I mean, specifically, you're out there the whole time with them in mind and what they're trying to
do. You might have one period where you go one-on-ones and, you know, y'all compete. You go against your team's defense, not the other team's. But the majority of the time, you're going on, you're working on whatever your team you're playing. You know, there's no, so it's the exact opposite. If they're just doing one or two periods for the team they're about to play now, during the season, it's all the periods. And you might have sometimes where you want to go one versus one, just because one versus one gives you a better, a more, you know, athletic appearance of just playing. When you go against a scout team, you usually perform pretty well against them. So you want to have a little bit of competition out there. So you might do a one period early in the week where it's ones versus ones.
But for the most part, it's constant in terms of getting ready for that week's opponent, which really,
yeah,
again, highlights. You're talking about a tenth to maybe a fifth of the time that they're out here taking a peek, yeah, at what the team is doing. So it keeps it in perspective that they're not necessarily concerned so much about what the Giants are throwing at them, but how concerned are you about, you know, it's only one drive, but Pittsburgh, yeah, goes boom, boom, boom right down the field. So, excuse me, what are you looking for specifically out of the first team defense when they go up against the Giants tomorrow?
Well, you're definitely looking for a little bit more impact than what they did last time. You want to get a three and out, possibly. That would be great, but you just want to go out there and look better than you did last week. There's no way they should just drive right down the field. And they might have a drive for some points, but it's the way Pittsburgh went down the field. It just looked really easy. Like, everything they did worked, and then they threw a bomb, and the guy was 5 yards past the defensive back, even though he slipped on the ground. You know, so, but you just, you got to see more. You've got to see more of a struggle for their offense to go down the field. And this is how the preseason typically works. You don't look at anything week one. I've been in on teams where we just had a little film study the night before the game of this is what they do usually in the first preseason game with this coordinator. And then you'll just look at kind of some of the things they've done. Because normally you're just working on your stuff still. It's still early in the preseason. The second week, usually a little bit more. The third week, you're pretty much game planning for that team because you're trying to get a kind of dry run for the season. And then the fourth week, you know, it's usually the younger guys doing a lot of the stuff.
Fighting for last roster,
yep,
spots.
Sure. Gus Bradley joined Jeff Loggeman last night on the Gus Bradley Show here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. You can hear that every Thursday night here at 6 o'clock. And ask Blake, and Gus was asked about Blake Bortles, who we heard from yesterday talking about specifically the overthrow to Harper in the end zone and his own diagnosis of what went wrong for him on that kind of play. Gus Bradley was asked about Blake and his ability to diagnose those kinds of errors.
You know how we've been talking about we're building a culture and we're trying to create an environment where these guys have no fear and all these concepts and all the things that have been taking place in the last 2 years, like, hey, it's important that our players have humility. Why? So they identify weaknesses. Why? That allows us to get better and improve. And we have to drive that home and keep that one of the top portions of our culture. And it's a classic example, right? Hey, Blake, what happened? He had humility. He identified his weakness, and now he can improve and get better at it. And it sounds so simple, but it's hard. And now if you have a culture where everybody's doing that, that's where you can see rapid improvement. And, you know, I love hearing it, but that's who he is anyway. And we got to make sure we protect that mentality and continue to grow off of that.
Is that a rare mentality?
So I think this is great. I think what Gus is talking about right here is an awesome thing. He's basically saying take the blame and figure out where you went wrong, not pass the blame on to other people. And it's not just for the quarterback. He's saying it's a culture for the whole team. So I've met a lot of people that it's never their fault. There's always something that happened. I slipped in the grass. I had a, you know, piece of sweat, you know, fall in my eye. My gloves are wet. Man, I've been trying to get some better gloves. They won't give me any better gloves. You know, there's always something. And so he's just saying,
cheap.
Yeah.
Guys.
You know, he's just saying, you know, hey, what could I have done better in that situation? And now think about it, move on, and improve the next time. Don't let it happen the next time, because you don't want to see the same mistakes happen over and over again, and it's good that he's teaching these guys.
Yeah, and we may ask in the break who the glove guy was.
Yeah, hey, come on, glove guy. He's got to be long gone. Clearly.
Half of the receivers.
Based on the last 3 years, we've got a new glove guy every week, I think, based on the lack of wins here. All right, coming up, we've got this state in football history, the drive around the NFL as well. More of your calls welcome at 641-1010 if you'd like to weigh in with that. With David Garrard, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Cardinal and Cadillac Friday. We'll hear more from Gus Bradley coming up as well. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. What are the three things you'll be keying on the most for the Jaguars tonight when they take on the Giants? What three things will have your attention going into the game that you're hoping to see from the Jags' performance in preseason week number two? Again, you'll hear it in its entirety, pregame to postgame coverage, right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. The state in football history, straight ahead. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, August 21st, way back in 1922, we talk about heritage franchises. Well, a guy named Curly got a team. Curly Lambeau and the Green Bay Football Club were granted an NFL franchise on this date back in 1922. On this date, in 2009, remember A.J. Trapasso? The only reason anybody would is because he's the punter.
Yeah, I was about to say, because you just said his name a moment ago,
He hit the scoreboard in Dallas. The Cowboys played their first game at their new stadium in Arlington, Texas. And during that game, the Titans punter hit the scoreboard hanging in the center of the stadium. Everyone thought there would be just an outbreak of that happening. Really hasn't been an issue since then. Birthdays on this date, the only two-time Heisman winner, Archie Griffin, played 7 years in the NFL with Cincinnati Bengals. Never had a 700-yard rushing season, despite winning those two Heismans. He was born on this date in 1954.
They used him up at Ohio State.
Yes, they did. Jim McMahon, born in 1959. He turns 56 today, guys. Jim McMahon played 15 years in the NFL. I want guesses from each of you on total touchdowns, total interceptions in a 15-year career for Jim McMahon, in which, and I'll put it this way, he has a record of 67-30. So he was credited with 97 decisions as a starting quarterback. How many touchdowns? How many interceptions? What do you got?
He was not really a thrower of the ball. He did have Willie Galton, those guys. I don't know, man.
15 years. Come on, give me a number. What do you got? Tony, what do you got?
I was going to go 115 and 120.
115, 120. 190. He threw 100 touchdowns.
I was going to say 100
in 15 years.
So not 190.
100 touchdowns, 90 interceptions. In 15 years.
Are you serious?
In 85, when they won the Super Bowl, he threw 15 touchdowns.
Yeah.
It's the only year he threw more than 12 in his entire NFL career. So there you have it. Happy birthday, Jim McMahon. Also on this date in 1975, happy 40th to one of the all-time draft busts, Akili Smith. And, boy, 40 already? I guess so.
Wow.
And Mike Evans. How old's Mike Evans? He's 22. Jeez. Oh, man, what a beast that guy is. 22 years old for the Tampa Bay Bucks in that wide receiver core. The Jags will see him when they invade the Raymond James Stadium on week five.
Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Give them a call at 620-9225. If you need cosmetic work done, if you're in the market for a family dentist, maybe you need Invisalign, or you're in the market for that custom-fit SomnoMed SnoreGuard, check them out at jamesjmccall.com. That is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Robert Griffin III went 2-for-5 last night for Washington before suffering a concussion and a stinger after diving to the ground to recover his own fumble on a play where he wasn't touched but just dropped the ball. Washington head coach Jay Gruden said that RG3 will be going through the concussion protocol. They are unsure when he'll be back on the field, but they did say he will be the starter when he is back and healthy. Buffalo Bills defensive tackle Marcell Dareus expressed his frustration with where his contract negotiations are with the team after their game in Cleveland last night. The team was reportedly offered over $90 million over 6 years, which is just over $15 million a season. The problem with that money is the money that Ndamukong Suh got from the Dolphins at 6 years, $114 million. When asked by the Buffalo News if he had a specific number in mind, Dareus responded, quote, "Thank you, Sue." Darius is playing under the Bills' fifth-year option on his rookie deal for just over $8 million this season. And the agent for Cam Chancellor, the Seattle Seahawks safety, Alvin Keels, reiterated yesterday that Chancellor will not report to the team until his contract is renegotiated. Chancellor has 3 years and just under $17 million remaining on the four-year contract extension that he signed before the 2013 season. The Seahawks GM staying strong, at least for now, that they're not going to renegotiate before your final year of a contract.
Well, and you think about it. Michael Bennett is unhappy with his contract, right? But he has shown up, and he's in training camp, and he's working with those guys. Imagine if Chancellor doesn't show up, and they rip it up and give him a new contract. What happens with Michael Bennett?
Still, he's not there yet. We're going into week 3 and 4 of training camp, and Chancellor still hasn't shown up
I know.
Yet.
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. But if they were to bow to him and give him that new deal,
and
then it's going
to
be like,
that's out there actually
right,
practicing.
Like, wait a minute now. At least I showed up and I tried to do
sure.
the right thing.
And there's some thought that Michael Bennett's asking for the money that he's asking for because they were willing to renegotiate with Marshawn Lynch.
Right.
Like, they all feel like they opened the door with Lynch. This is what happens with teams that get really good in this league.
Exactly.
Guys start asking for money, but they open the door for Lynch to renegotiate that contract to make sure they kept him there. Michael Bennett, if you look at the metrics of it, is being underpaid. For the value that he has at that position for that team, he's being underpaid. He knows it. He expressed it this offseason, but he showed up. Cam Chancellor is probably being underpaid, but he's not showing up. I mean, how they're going to deal with all these moving parts is really interesting.
Well, you can't do a deal a couple years ago, and you got 3 years left on your deal, and just say, no, I need more money. I mean, there's one thing to say, you know, I'd like to work on some kind of extension or some kind of pay increase because I am underpaid, but you have to go out and be there with your team. You got 3 years left. It's not like, you know, you're going into your last year and they may try to franchise you, that kind of stuff. You have 3 years left, and just because your team has been successful and you've played well, they paid you accordingly, you know, a couple of years ago when you redid your deal. So there's one thing to ask and want more money, but there's another thing to say, I'm not going to play just because, you know, 3 years left
sure.
of my deal.
And they've shown their willingness to do that this offseason. By renegotiating with Marshawn, they give Russell the big contract, they give Bobby Wagner the contract. They're showing that they're willing to pay that money to guys that are coming up on a contract year. They don't want to do it before that. And you can understand why, because you don't want to open that door.
You're redoing the whole thing.
Right.
You
don't.
At,
at least get through this year and then make a look. I mean, you can't do it 3 years out.
Well, because part of Dave, what the player gets is they get some security in the form of their guaranteed money when they sign that
yep.
deal. And they take that and they say, you know what, we're going to get this. And if I don't play up to that level, I'm still getting this guaranteed money. I'll still probably get a few years out of this contract, even with the non-guaranteed stuff. And so you give up maybe some of that high-end earning potential for some security, bird in hand. You know, Russell Wilson, if he had played it out this year, and let's say he threw 32 touchdowns, he only threw 20 last year, but yep. let's say he became more of a pocket threat with Jimmy Graham on that team, maybe then he deserves 25,
yeah.
26 million a year. But instead, you know what? Let me take the injury risk out of the
equation.
Because
you don't know when you're going to get hurt.
You just don't know.
And so you signed that deal. You willingly signed that deal, trying to get that security, that comfort to be able to go out and play. And, yes, you have been playing well, and you're one of the best safeties in the league. But you're just asking for them to do a lot. I mean, 3 years out is a long ways.
Marcel Darius is a very good football player. He's not Ndamukong Suh. So you could be happy that Ndamukong Suh got $19 million, and that may raise your total. But it doesn't mean it's going to raise it to $19
yeah.
million
yeah.
per.
I mean, he's a guy who's, what, probably averaging six and a half sacks a year from the defensive tackle
position. Which is good.
Which is
yeah.
really a good number.
He's a force.
Yeah.
I watched him last night.
$8 million this year for that guy. The odds of him, I mean, maybe if he hits the free agent market, the number's higher than what Buffalo's offering. I don't know. You know, because...
Well, they say what? They're offering something in the $13 million a year range?
15.
Is it 15?
15 million a year.
That's a lot of...
I know. That's a lot of money, and maybe he feels like, look, they're going to give me Sue kind of money, or I'm going to go see. And if you're Darius, okay. You know, if that's the way that you want to play this whole thing out, I get it. You're on one of the most dominant defensive lines in the National Football League. You got Rex Ryan coming in who's going to make everybody look even better with what he can do as far as blitz packages. Do you really want to give up that golden goose right now? I get pushing the Bills for a little bit of money, but be cool about this, man. I mean, you got to be reasonable.
You got to be smart. I heard Jeff Prosser talk about this morning. J.R. Smith with the Cleveland Cavaliers, right?
Yeah.
He could have opted in next year at $8 million. He said, "No, man, I had a pretty impactful season with a contender. Let me go out there and hit the open market." And everyone's like, "We know you're crazy. Are you kidding
exactly.
me? You're not going to be playing with LeBron
exactly.
if you come to our city."
Yeah.
So he went back and re-signed with Cleveland for 2 years, $10 million, mm-hmm. which you figure, had he played out the $8 million option, he certainly would have made more than $10 million over 2 years. So sometimes the bird in hand is a better deal.
It is, and especially in that situation. I mean, even with LeBron, you still had a number of issues out there on the court. So now take yourself and put you as the man on a team.
We saw him in New York with the Knicks on a bad team.
Exactly.
He was a mess. So,
just a lot more will come out of you playing with LeBron than going and trying to beat a man somewhere else.
Although, I'm wondering, what do you guess? I have no idea what this total is. What do you guess J.R. Smith's made in his career?
No idea.
What do you think? I'm guessing. Is it $40 million? $50 million? Has he made that much? Has he played long enough to make that kind of money?
I bet he has.
In the NBA?
So
he's probably thinking, all right, you know what? I'll take a chance. I'll roll the diamond. It's not
what
like
you're talking
us,
about. Right. You're talking about playing with LeBron, and in Buffalo, you're playing with the first team All AP player last year, the All Pro defensive end, and Mario Williams. You got Kyle Williams next to him, and Hughes on the other side of
it. Sure.
There's a lot of talent around you that's helping
you're
you.
You're always
right
going to be beating one guy.
Right.
All right. By the way, I'm told by Tyler Devitt, I should have mentioned this a few minutes ago, if you're trying to get in on the phone line, it's not going to happen. Because phone line's apparently down right now, so we'll update you when they get fixed. This one in on the text line, you can text us at 641-1010, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. David's the best thing about 1010, hashtag Dempsey sucks. So there you go. Express your opinion, doesn't bother me in the least bit. I hear it at home all the time. So it's really nothing that's going to shake me.
Just facts.
At this point. Just the facts, please. Just the facts. Glad you're back with us, Dave. We will hear more from Gus Bradley coming up. It's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Tony, be careful. It doesn't flex.
I know.
May knock you through the wall. Greg Jones. Visiting the studio. David Garrard brings him
in. I'm just happy he came in with his shirt on, not to make us all feel.
Believe me.
Too bad.
Seriously. the most crazy physique in the National Football League over the last 15 years. It belonged to Greg Jones, no doubt about it. And nice to see him retire as a Jaguar. And is he scaring you out of the coaching internship or what? Hey, this is real work, Dave. They're actually making us put in hours for this thing.
Yeah, I like my midday nap, so that...
Bro, tell me about it. I do two-hour radio show, and I got to get a midday nap, too. So, Greg was saying, you asked him, how's it going? Is it a lot of hours? And those eyes rolled pretty quickly. Oh, my goodness. You know what? Welcome to life after football, right?
Yeah.
It's just the way it goes. But you thinking about doing it yourself?
Yeah, I am. It's something that's just in my blood, and every day I'm watching these games and, listening to you guys on the radio. And I'm like, man, I should be doing something with these guys if it's not here somewhere.
Sure.
Just the fact that we do have a team here and, I did play here. It makes it a little easier, especially for my wife with the three kids at home. I don't have to, hopefully I wouldn't have to take off and go somewhere else.
Right.
Intern, if I'm making money, that's a little different, but, interning.
Yeah, you're going to go to where an intern? Yeah. I don't think so.
But, we'll see.
That'd be cool, man.
Yeah.
And then, Tony, anytime we have a source close to the organization, we couldn't use that anymore.
No.
Because they'd be like, yeah, Garrard told you what today?
Oh, no.
No, he wouldn't. We'd be cut off. The pipeline, the line would be drawn, and he'd be management all of a sudden.
That's right. Blaine Gabbert, number one.
Yeah.
Worst draft picks of all time. I'm never going to let you forget
He did a lot of quality things. See,
that's it. That's how you switch it around.
Exactly.
Team guy, David Garrard, letting you know how he really feels about it. Tom Coughlin obviously played a big role in your career and still going strong up there in New York.
Yeah.
And the Jags will see him this weekend. Just, when you look back, when I bring up the name Tom Coughlin, what's the first thing that pops into your mind?
Man, that was a tough year. It was my rookie year, and I was just thinking, if this is the NFL, man, this is going to be a long career for me, because this first year is scaring me to death. You know, just the way the pressure was on the whole team, the way he was on everybody. He had a military style about him, and I had not played for a coach in my whole football career like that. And so coming into it, knowing that he was, you know, it was this year or it wasn't going to be any more years here, he applied a lot of pressure on us guys. And at times when I felt like I was actually performing well in the preseason and, you know, in practice, those kind of things, he still would find things that I was doing wrong. I'm like, man, coach, you know, can you give me one positive?
Fourth rounder or a break.
You know, can I get one positive? That was a touchdown there, coach, you know. But I learned a lot from him. I learned that you got to be dedicated in this league if you want to stay in this league. And, you know, I still appreciate everything he did for me, bringing me into this league. And I actually just text Dwayne Harris, receiver for them, special teams guy, return guy. He's doing really well up there. And I told him, tell Coughlin, I said, what's up? You know, so
yeah.
I think he's from what you hear, he's dialed back a little bit. You know,
surprised to hear that? Because that was the thing. He got to the brink, you know, of losing his job maybe in New York. And some of the team leaders like Michael Strahan were very open about it. He needs to, you know, change his ways in today's NFL. And credit to Tom, he did. And the result is he's got two championships.
Absolutely. And Tom's a great guy. You know, when I knew him as a rookie, he was great away from the stadium. If you were at a charity event, man, he was so passionate about those things. And you could talk to him, you know.
It still is.
You could talk to him like a regular guy, you know. But, man, when we were inside these walls, it was all business. I would try to pass and say, hey, coach, how's it going today? Oh, it's going great, Dave. Now, let me tell you about that read that you had. Coach, I'm walking out to go home, you know. But he's all business, and, you know, you can respect that from a guy. And, you know, you always knew what you were getting from him. There was no let me, you know, beat around the bush here. There was no let me, you know, smooth things out. He was straight up and down. He's going to tell you exactly how
you like
feels.
That, though, right? I mean, you'd rather have that than
that's
a guy
that's what I'm
that,
saying. You definitely like to get that, and not somebody that tells you one thing but does something else.
Greg's nodding his head over there too. I mean, that's important, right, for players? Seriously, right? I mean, that you get that it's a consistent message, and that it, even if it's bad news for you, he's going to shoot you straight about
absolutely.
It. Gus Bradley, last night on the Gus Bradley Show here, was asked about that. We see Gus at the J Fund events in town, and Tom's always made a point of reaching out to the current coaching staff whenever he's in doing his charity events. And Gus was asked about that, just kind of what level of interaction he's had with Tom Coughlin.
Over the years, we always try to get together at the Combine or, you know, when he comes back here to Jacksonville on his charity event. Just a phenomenal person. I've learned a great deal, even though we've had short meetings, just his perspective and how he goes about things. And Jacksonville means a lot to him now. I mean, he's had some really good years here. So, Coach Coughlin, hold him in high, high, high regard.
I believe that from Gus. I don't think he's just, you know, giving lip service to that. And I've said it for a few years now. I think Tom's life's work is really the J Fund. You know, as great as he is, he's going in the Hall of Fame one day. Guy's won two Super Bowls, took this franchise to two AFC Championship games, and the amount of lives he's impacted beyond that is phenomenal. And the fact that he kept doing it here in Jacksonville when he could have easily just, you know, would have made sense to pick up roots. And he's grown the J Fund by opening the New York branch. And, I mean, we've seen, Tony and I have met so many of these people. I'm sure you have as well.
It's incredible.
It's crazy how many people's lives are so much better because of what not only Tom but his entire family and everybody who works for the J Fund, the work they've done.
No, it's incredible the impact he's had in this community and in several communities across this country, and continues to be as effective a football coach as he is at the same time as the Jags get ready to take him and the Giants on tomorrow night. Gus Bradley asked by Jeff Loggeman for one thing that sticks out that he's learned from Coach Coughlin.
Well, I think, you know, be strong in your convictions, but then be ready to adapt. I think that's the one thing that stood out, because he is very strongly convicted and he knows how he wants to do things. But then he adapted and he adjusted to the game. And, you know, you talk about dealing with the millennial generation. And
I didn't even know there was such a term.
Yeah, and it's different. It's different. All of a sudden now with the players these days, respect, trust, communication are important concepts. And, you know, you have to adjust to that as a coach. It's no longer the command style, although coaches can do it, but it's just more difficult. And these players want to be able to, you know, have those three traits applied to them from a coach. And Coach Coughlin's done an amazing job adjusting to that.
All right, let's get to some of the on-field stuff as well. Obviously, the Giants and the Jags will tangle tomorrow night with a 7:30 kick, and Gus Bradley was asked about it last night on his show, about the challenges that his team will see against New York this week.
First of all, going on the road, we have the mentality we'll go anywhere to compete, and it just happens to be in with the Giants this week. So, but I think, you know, just getting your routine done on the road and knowing how to, you know, to take all the time that you have allotted for you and to make the best possible use of it. Then to go into another environment where, you know, all of a sudden the offense is looking at snap count, cadence, you know, some crowd noise issues. So we've been working on that, you know, silent counts all the way throughout. I mean, those are issues that come up. And then, you know, guys playing in a different environment that they're not accustomed to. We still have some young players on our team that have, you know, this will be their first road game ever in the NFL. So, you know, all those combinations of things. But, you know, I really like the team, the way they think, the way they operate. It's not too big for them, and they're really excited about it.
I think for, you know, for the first year guys, everything, you know, that first time through is new experience, and you need to learn how to adapt. But for these guys like, you know, Blake and Allen Robinson, guys that have been here a year, is it already kind of old hat when you take it on the road?
I wouldn't say it's old hat, you know, because they're still really young. You know, if they haven't played in New York, maybe they have, I can't remember. But it still is a good thing for them to go up there with new guys that haven't played in those kind of environments, especially the young rookies. You know, going to New York is always a cool thing. But once you get inside those white lines, you know, it's just football. And, you know, they were talking about the snap count and those kind of things. Usually you're going into a visitor stadium with a silent count ready to go. But I can tell you your offensive line always wants to hear your voice. And if it gets quiet enough, if the crowd isn't into it enough, then they'll go to the quarterback's voice. That's what they want to hear because they can anticipate the snap. When it's a silent count, you know, it can be a little tough on them, and it can be a little tough on younger guys that, you know, aren't really used to it.
You mentioned the offensive line. It's a good opportunity to get your reaction to how they played last week. You know, Joku gave up the sack. But
yeah,
for the most part, I thought there were more occasions of Blake just standing there kind of surveying the field than we've seen much of in the last few years. How do you think they performed as a unit?
You know, I thought the only glaring one was Joku giving up the sack. I remember watching the game thinking when Blake got hit that, oh, you know, Joku gave up that sack there. But then I never really noticed any other time where I felt like, man, you know, Blake or Chad, anybody's really under a whole lot of pressure here. So I left the game thinking, man, the offensive line did well. And the reason why I also think they did well is the way the running backs were able to run the ball, too. You know, I know Gerhardt got a lot of positive comments coming out of that game, and he should have. But I thought the way Robinson ran, too, was, you know, that made me feel good because I think the way that Yeldon is, he's just going to be really explosive coming out of the backfield. So if you look at those two guys having that kind of success, I just think the way they're going to have that 1, 2, and 3 punch from those guys, mm-hmm, it's going to be a great thing for Blake. Because if he said it time and time again, if he can have that run game going, man, you can be really successful as a quarterback.
No doubt. You need that run game to work, though. It didn't last year. We'll see if they can make
no,
it work.
No, it did not.
In 2015.
For a couple games.
Yeah, Denard had a flash.
Yeah.
A little flash there. Gus Bradley, last night, we talk about it all the time at this point in the year, special teams and what you need to do to make a roster in the NFL. If you are those rookies that are fighting for those kind of spots, special teams is where you're probably going to make or not make this roster. Gus Bradley last night listing some special team standouts.
Leroy Reynolds, I think we're really happy with him. He is a guy that has ownership in the special teams and has kind of been our leader of the special teams, so he has stood out. Rashad Green really stood out. I think for him, you know, the big thing is you trust him, and he seems to hit it north and south, so that was a good deal. Denard Robinson on his kickoff return, you know, I think his speed, we all know that his speed, but just to be able to hit it the way he did, you know, that was good. Protection, the punt game was good, solid. So, you know, I think you look at those attributes, your eyes tend to focus on the returners because it's such a big deal for us.
Certainly are. And last week, I thought, again, saw a spark there, right, with Green with the 37-yard punt return. Haven't seen much of that in a long time here.
Absolutely. That's just another icing on the cake right there. If you can have special teams really impact you like that, and we're not saying always take the ball back and score touchdowns, but, man, if you can really get the ball out to the 40, 45-yard line at times, you're really flipping the field.
Pick up 20 yards on the return, it's two first downs, right? I mean, that's
exactly.
You think of it that way.
And there's a Graham kid or something like that.
Corey Grant. Grant, the rookie out of Auburn.
Okay,
yeah.
And I've been hearing talk about him, seeing what he can do. Didn't he have a...
He's very fast. He had a long run that got called back because of a hole.
Okay, but I remember that run thinking, okay, well, when you spark like that, when you have those kind of plays that sit in people's minds, that's how you make the team. Even though you're fighting for a roster spot, that's how you make the team. If not a roster spot, maybe practice squad, but that's how you do it. When your opportunity comes, you got to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, Nick Marshall and Denard also had nice kickoff returns in that game last week. Mm-hmm. Gus also asked about James Sample, who returned to practice after dealing with the broken arm they suffered in OTAs, got back out on a limited basis early in the week, just was asked to update where he stands right now.
He was involved a little bit more in practice this week. We'll see how he responded after this week of practice. And most of the players, all the players are going out with us on this trip. So we'll get a chance to work him out and see how he does. And then next week, Monday, we'll reevaluate. And hopefully we can get him involved in some contact. And then we'll evaluate where he's at.
Yeah, they're gonna work him out, Tony. In other words, he's going to warm up. He's not going to play. And then they're looking to get him, you know, up to full speed, and hopefully, maybe even by preseason game three, have him out there and just see what he can do, right?
I know we're all anxious to see, right? I mean, look, the safety spot is one that we continually talk about here in Jacksonville. Everyone wants to see Cyprian take that step up. They draft Sample in the fourth round to come in here and push potentially for that starting free safety job. We haven't had a chance to see him yet. So hopefully here in the next couple weeks we get that first opportunity. It sounds like he's recovering pretty well, right on time. Gus Bradley, one last comment from him. He was asked last night by Jeff Loggeman, have the personnel talk started as far as the kind of numbers you want to keep at different positions on that 53?
Yeah, they have. You know, we have personnel meetings with the whole staff a couple times a week, and we had one last night again where we talk about every player on the team, every position. We don't get into specific, maybe the numbers that we're going to keep at each, but we get a good feel, and then each scout gets an opportunity to talk. And then Dave and I just go through it. You know, we put the numbers up there and anticipate things, but we try to keep an open mind because we know the next couple of games a lot of things can happen.
All right, glad you're along with us today. There you go, Gus Bradley from the Gus Bradley Show. Of course, you'll hear Gus on the pregame tomorrow, again with Jeff Loggeman, getting you ready for kickoff as we go on the air at 4:30 here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM, 7:30 kick, 2 hours of postgame coverage featuring Fred Taylor, JP Shadrick, myself. So stick around, obviously, for that. I look forward to that as we march closer to the games that really matter. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday since 1905, the preferred Cadillac dealer in Northeast Florida, and part of the reasons why the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville, and absolutely no dealer fees. It's the Claude Nolan Edge, and by the way, they're the only Cadillac dealer in North Florida selling and servicing the ELR. ClaudeNolan.com is the website. 4700 Southside Boulevard is the location. Stop in, say hello, check out what they've got, and tell them Mike Dempsey sent you. You're going to get the best deals on the lot. Call 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here. Coming back, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight asking you today, what three things will you be most keying on for the Jacksonville Jaguars as they take on the Giants tomorrow night? With David Garrard, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We're just chatting away here. Fortunato's running something over here. I hear somebody talking on some audio thing. I think we're still in a commercial break. We're just chatting away. You haven't seen Ant-Man, and you haven't seen Fantastic Four.
No.
What the heck did you do all summer?
I watched everything else.
You did?
I've seen Minions. I've seen...
Minions.
Yeah, it's Minions. Yeah. And then I've seen Inside Out. I almost teared up.
I really liked it.
I almost teared up. Well, when you know, having kids, anything kid related and yes. there's some kind of sad story, I start to tear now.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah, so I was like, please hurry up and get back to the tower.
I know. I said this before, but the girl in the movie's 11 years old, and her name's Riley.
Yeah.
And I've coached this girl named Riley who has been on my soccer team for like 6 years, and she's 11. And it was like, oh, it's Riley.
Yeah. And I have so two girls, and I'm like, I've got to do better. I could do better.
But no Ant-Man for you. I'm
not
surprised.
Yet, but I'm going. You know, we still have a couple of days left of summer before my son goes back to school.
Tony had already seen Mad Max like six times by the time you departed for the summer, right?
Yeah, and I'd seen it.
Yeah.
I saw Mad Max.
It was okay.
11 days till I can get it on Blu-ray.
I love Mad Max.
Have you seen the new Mission Impossible movie?
Haven't seen that yet either.
It was a lot of fun.
It was good.
Mission Impossible?
Because a lot of people even said it was better than Mad Max.
I've seen the Man Named Uncle.
Easy there.
It's not better than Mad Max. That's crazy.
He's
talk.
Angry.
I've seen the Man Named Uncle. I think
Man from Uncle.
Man from Uncle. Yeah,
I think so.
How's that? That one.
I liked it.
I like Guy Ritchie. I don't know how to feel it about it yet. Yeah,
I liked it. It I don't know. It was. I liked. What was the other one with Samuel Jackson in it? What was that movie where it's kind of the same kind of feel?
Kingsman?
Kingsman.
Yeah.
I like that Kingsman. A whole lot more.
Yeah, where he's talking with the lift.
Yeah, I like that one a whole lot more. But it wasn't bad, though. I'm sure there's more coming out because they're a team
catching
now.
Up to do.
I do.
Now, because now Marvel's done. We're good until Civil War.
Yeah.
Next May, I think, for that, for Captain America. We're
correct.
Pretty much everybody but Hulk and Thor is guaranteed to be in that movie. And, yes, Geek Out with Jaguars today.
A bunch of characters you haven't seen on screen yet are going to be showing up for the first time,
that's
too.
Awesome. I love new characters.
It's going to be good. All right, let's get to the fan feedback spotlight today. Speaking of characters, Jags will give you 90 of them to follow tomorrow night as they take on the New York Giants. We asked folks today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, what are the three things you'll most be looking for from the Jaguars tomorrow? Tony, what did we get?
Here's what we got from Eric. He said pass protection improving, some pass rush, and I'd like to see more plays downfield. From Demetrius, number one, how the cornerbacks fare against OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr. For number two, once again, Luke Jokel. And then 3A, how Josh Evans responds to strong safety, and 3B, quarterback hurries. And from Black Dog Express, Eli going three and out. Jags start with 8 on the board and like to see B2 throw deep.
Now, Craig Loston actually going to get some run, it looks like, at strong safety. And it's interesting to watch how that whole thing plays out. I talked to Josh Evans for the pregame show. When we spoke with Dave Caldwell earlier this summer, Tony, he was really strong in his praise of what Josh Evans brings as a football player. He's a guy who played hurt through a shoulder that really he hurt prior to even last season and opted, Dave, not to have surgery, didn't miss any time because of it, had the labrum surgery back in January, and now feels like he's 100%. But Caldwell just, you know, loves him because he's one of these guys that eats, sleeps, and drinks football. You ask if you told him to go out there and play center, he'd go out there and play center. You know, one of those type guys. And, you know, how far, when you are a guy on the fringe, and I'm not saying you were that guy, but you've seen guys be that last couple of fellas to make the roster. How important is having that willingness to do anything and at least be competent at multiple things, you know, that versatility to make in that roster?
I mean, those are the kind of guys you want to go to war with. Those are the kind of guys you want to go out there on the field on Sunday and just, you know, they're going to have your back. You just, you don't want a guy to go out there and you know, be so beat up that he's still giving you his all, but it's still hurting the team. You know, that's the gray area that you have to deal with. But those guys that are willing to put it on the line, they're willing to play wherever you need them to play. Coaches love that. Guys that eat, sleep football, I mean, that's what you want. So when you can do that, coaches will find a way to keep you around.
Well, as a starting quarterback in this league for a number of years, Dave, how much were you paying attention to those guys who basically that was their role on the team? They were special teams guys. That's why they were there. How much did you, as a starting quarterback for an NFL franchise, pay attention to what those guys were doing, how they were doing their job?
Well, like I said, it would have to be the guys that would flash. You know, if you're just, you know, kind of a guy and you're trying to make it on special teams, you know, usually you're not really paying that much attention to special team guys. It's usually the returners, just like Gus said earlier. So
basically, you're like every other person in the world. Because that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
We're all like, yeah, he's a hell of a gunner. Okay, I'm taking the coach's word for it because I'm watching the ball.
Unless you're somebody like, what's the receiver we had that he was just all special?
Sim Osgood.
Yes. Unless you're somebody like that is a little bit of a character, but you're always making plays. You're a gunner. You're kicking off sometimes. You know, you're just that guy that is doing everything, and everybody recognizes that. Then you're going to pay attention to that a little bit. It's the guys that are just fighting out there, trying to make a good block or trying to make a tackle, are the guys that, you know, it's hard to look at that. It's the coaches watching film that are going to, you know, say whether or not those guys are going to make the team.
Of course, he noticed it, and he goes, what was that guy's name that we had? I think I remember somebody making a bad play.
Well, David was here. They had a couple.
I would remember Montel, but I really wanted Kasim Osgood to be a receiver. When I played with him at the Pro Bowl that year, he made so many plays in practice and in that game for me that I thought, man, if we could get this guy here, and then when we were talking about bringing him in, I said, well, he has my vote. And then when he got here, you could see that there were some things that he lacked as a receiver.
What was it? What was he missing?
He just was not very consistent. And consistent on just basic plays. And he was one of those guys that would give you, my glove is too tight, oh, my ring finger's a little off, you know, I got to pop my knuckles that time, you know, it jammed my finger. It was just always something. But when he went out there for special teams, man, he flew around. He made plays. But it was just the lack of consistency for him as a receiver, just lining up wrong sometimes, not running the route like it should be run, and then just dropping the ball. He had the speed, he had the size, you know, he had the
big,
yeah,
man.
And he could go out and block his butt off. But man, when you just did not have all confidence in him to go out and make that play for you.
Did Montel wander around the locker room just talking about the Pro Bowl? Like, just with all you guys,
three of them, right?
Yeah, just talking about the Pro Bowl appearances.
No, he didn't. Montel sure? is a super humble guy, a great guy, and no, he never did. No,
he really is a good. And it's amazing that you guys had two of the what were, at least by reputation, more renowned guys. Fortunato is now taking Montel Owens' photo off the wall and parading it in front of our
Pro Bowl wall
here.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the Pro Bowl wall out there. So all the Jags who made the Pro Bowl next to all the cheerleaders who've made the Pro Bowl as well.
Yes.
One from
that
every team.
Happened to be right in the window.
We didn't organize the place. I just chose to sit on this side of the table.
I get to stare at Big Bo.
That's right. And me. What a downer that is. That's a big letdown. All right, Dave, as we wrap up here, give us a couple things. I know we've mentioned several, but give us two or three top things that you'll be looking for tomorrow night.
Well, definitely the defense getting off the field. I mean, they're going to have at least a quarter and a half possibly going against Eli and the boys. So I want to see them get off the field, not give up too many points, and apply some pressure. But then I also want to, man, I love the size and speed and ability of Allen Robinson. I want to see him, you know, get the ball, make some plays. I love that. And I do want to see the offensive line continue to protect Joko. I want to see him give up no sacks for the time that he's out there. You know, I don't want his name to be called. If it's called, it's because he is just...
Well, we're going to put that guy on the ground, right?
Yes, demolishing guys, you know, so... those are the things that I'm looking forward to. Of course, I'm always looking forward to seeing Blake perform. If he can just stay consistent, he doesn't have to do anything just extraordinary. Just go out there and be the same guy he was last week. Just be sharp. If guys are dropping the ball, keep putting it on the money. They'll eventually start catching it. You know, so those are things that I'm looking for. I'm looking for another win. I know it's preseason, but you know, it's always nice when you can put W's on the board. We might not. I won't say that. Hopefully, we will see
plenty.
More wins this
Dave,
year.
Stop it.
We will see more wins
23-0. Okay.
I just want to see, you know, W be nice.
4-0 in the preseason.
There you go.
16-0 in the regular
season.
Although
there are a lot of teams like the Colts that have been
Ofer in the preseason and gone on, you know, every
year. Honestly, if you really look historically, there are teams that go Ofer, there are teams that go 4-0, there are teams that approach it completely different. And
yeah. Well, there's a reason.
Because of your third and fourth guys are the ones that are always at least winning or losing.
Yeah. Right. When you know you got with Ladainian Tomlinson, you don't play him in the preseason, and that might impact your results.
There's a reason the Colts go 0-4 every preseason, and it's because behind Andrew Luck, they stink. I mean, they are a terrible team. But without Andrew Luck.
You saw it when Peyton went out and they had no one to go to at quarterback.
Yeah.
So it's really the same way.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, man.
Good to have you back in the rotation now.
Absolutely.
Here on Jaguars today. So for David Garrard, for Fat Tony, shout out to my buddy John Walker in visiting in studio today. Who else? Greg Jones popping in. Gus Bradley, we got to hear from a little bit today.
Fortunato.
All of you out there. Fortunato's always lurking. Tyler Devitt producing, and all the snarky texters as well. All right? I hate all of you as well. Okay. I'm kidding. I love some of you. XL Primetime coming up next. We'll find out how the Hacker Fantasy League drafts went last night, among other things. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. Tony, myself, JP Shadrick, and a host of others. Pre-game coverage for the Jaguars starting at 4:30 here on 1010XL 92.5 FM as we'll see them take another step towards what we hope is a big 2015 regular season. Dave, good to see you. Don't forget Retro Fitness on Bay Meadows and in the Harbor Village Shopping Center and, of course, Retro Fitness Jacks online. People can get more information there.
Come work out with a purpose, baby. We
there
got
you go.
You.
Oh, work out with a purpose. That sounds like a slogan to me. Work out with a purpose. All right. For all the aforementioned, that'll do it for us. XL Primetime up next on 1010XL. Oh, yeah. Thanks to Caldwell and Cattle. I can't forget them. Our Friday sponsor here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job.
Let's go, Jaguars.